Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Dutilleux. Our November meeting's main topic featured Rob Kaiser talking about open risk and its applications.
Yeah, hey, I'm Rob Kaiser. I'm doing FPGAs, open risk, and RTL SDRs. Putting them all together. I'll pass these around. Oh, yeah, I used half a day of company time with the agreement that I say, I work for Unis Sleep Technologies. We make software for sleep clinics. So, there you go. Consider yourselves told. I'll pass around these things. They are marketed for their USB to DVB, basically digital video broadcast, when the CRTC and the FCC went and said, you may not broadcast in analog anymore over the air, rabbit ears. These things are required now. These are the computer versions, so you can't plug your rabbit ears into your computer, although I suppose you could do that theoretically still. They actually act as an analog-to-digital converter. That was a use that they, you know, were found to have had in the last little bit. So I'll cover that a little bit more. The antennas, I don't really care if you... Anybody care about the antennas? They're literally just antennas. They're quarter-wave antennas for those. It's the same antenna, different end. And for those of you wondering, no, they're not RSMA, they're not SMA, they're nothing standard. If you want to connect it to an actual decent radio antenna, you need to splice cable, which sucks, because then you have to actually shield it properly. I found out. They're literally just quarter wave antennas. They're nothing special.
I've only been able to get it to work in Windows.
I'll go into those in a little bit more detail in a few minutes, I guess. I'll pass around this as well. It's, how's this? It's $200, don't short it out. It's in a static bag, just be careful with it. What?
Is it water?
Yeah, that is, I'll be talking about that in a little bit too. It's the actual open risk, open system on a chip actually. It incorporates everything I'm doing. So I'll get started, I guess. So, first and foremost, what is an FPGA? I'm going to... FPGA? I spelled it right, too. Stands for Field Programmable Gate Array. Show of hands, how many people actually know, slash, use, slash, ever heard of this before? I want to know how... Okay, good. I want to know whether or not I'm talking too technical or why you should use it and why you should care.
What's the difference between this and what we had last month, which was like... A single signal processing chip.
Yeah, I'll get to that. But the Arduino specifically is a microcontroller at its core. It's an MSP, I think, or somebody correct me. What's the chipset on the Arduino?
Atmel.
Yeah, it's an Atmel. Yeah. So it's a RISC architecture, but it's an ASIC. It's actually comes from the factory as this architecture. That's all it does. So an FPGA. The idea behind it is that you can program it in the field, or program it in your office, or wherever. It is comprised of cells. They're usually, well, they almost always are in the number of thousands, simply because when you're talking about a cell, you're talking about actual logic gates. So you're going to be able to program them with Boolean logic, which is truth tables, effectively. They're composed of a few lookup tables, a full adder, a flip-flop, and a few multipliers. Holy shit! I went backwards. Damn it. Great presentation, right?
It's because you're not using Windows.
Bless me! Anyways, that's what they're comprised of. Obviously, it's a key flip-flop, by the way. But the actual looks something like that, usually. That's straight off Wikipedia, for people who care. You can build these things with actual circuits. Keep in mind, you'd be building a couple thousand to make it at all useful, and even then, it's not really useful. So, Yeah, electrically it's possible.
Why do they exist? Custom logic, prototyping, performance, research.
Realistically, they are used when you want to do something specialized. You're not going to find them in a standard computer, although personally I think you should. They're expensive in comparison to ASIC. And they don't run as fast. Yay for, you know, whatever that is, cloud tech thing. Keep on shutting stuff out. What else do you use FPGAs for, since people have somewhat used them? People raise their hands. I'm talking to people who raise their hands.
You said raise your hand if you'd heard of
them. Damn it.
I was
what have you heard they do?
Yeah, exactly.
What? Hacking.
Hacking? Okay. Sure. What else?
I've seen that SDR before, but I haven't gone deep into it as yet. It's mostly a Windows thing, unfortunately.
That's where you're wrong, but I'll get to that.
Well, I wish it weren't, but that's another story.
Yeah. So the FPGAs, come on, people. Cryptography is a big one, hacking, cracking encryption. What else is it used for?
Cleaning up data from analog amplifiers.
Okay, so signal processing. Okay. What else? Encoding, decoding, sure. Nothing. Okay. Well, you guys can read.
Emulating stuff.
Yeah, it can be used to emulate stuff. It usually isn't, simply because the stuff you're emulating is probably a larger amount of transistors, larger amount of gates than your FPGA, unless you spend a lot of money. To give you some idea, the FPGA that I've got that's going around is 22,000 cells. It cost me $200 for that whole thing. You can get ones that are 320 cells. It's going to PCI Express adapter with all kinds of other stuff on it. Run you about $1,000. They're not cheap. And keep in mind, 320,000 cells. How many was that? That was like an 808, give or take? Like a
80,
85, Z80. Yeah. So realistically, even with $1,000, ooh, I can do a Z80. It really is only used for specialized stuff. I'll get into OpenRISC a little bit. First of all, it's open source. OpenRISC is a reduced instruction set. That's by definition RISC. So sort of like ARM, sort of like the Atmel.
It's an open source CPU.
Yes.
Hardware?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is quite literally the architecture. ARM Holdings created ARM. When they give it to somebody, they get a license saying you can make ARM chips. This was designed by the community, or a community, I should say. And it's 32 and 64 bit. Here we get into the fun stuff. 1000 versus 1200. People are kind of crazy. The OpenRISC architecture is OpenRISC 1000. That's just what it's called. That's the version of it, all that stuff. The people that decided to make the chip, when I say make the chip, I mean, besides the architecture, there's also the firmware that interacts with electrically with the rest of the stuff on the board. That, they decided to name OpenRISC 1200. So you're really talking about two different things when you say OpenRISC. It sucks because there's really no way to differentiate it. And when you're starting, it really sucks because you have no clue. But, so just keep in mind, if you're ever going to look at this stuff, OpenRISC is an architecture set, first and foremost. It is also an implementation of that architecture, which is OpenRISC 1200. Don't ask me why they didn't name it differently. I don't know. It's licensed into the LGPL and GPL. LGPL is the architecture, and GPL is the firmware. So basically means you can take and modify and do whatever the heck you want with the actual architecture. You may not... you have to keep the GPL for the firmware, which is one of the reasons why it isn't as popular as some. It is actually in the mainline kernel, as of kernel 3.1. meaning you can compile for ARM, you can compile for x86-64, you can compile for OpenRISC. It's OR1200 is the actual architecture for the implementation of OpenRISC 1000. So you don't have to do any hacks to Linux kernel. It just works. Don't try and run OpenBSD or BSD or something like that. It just won't work. It also works with free RTOS and ECOS if you're into the embedded stuff. It's just an implementation of an architecture that was open source. So as long as the operating system supports it, it's good to go. It's written in Verilog. How many people have written Verilog? Nobody? Good.
Anything you say will not be contradicted.
No, to be fair, I went through the hello world of Verilog. Oh my god, trying to do hardware descriptor language is another whole ball of wax. So, props to the people who can do it. There are things out there, if you're at all interested, that will take System C and actually compile it, because you are talking about a compilation to another language, compile it to Verilog. So because of that, you can bastardize the language by going from JavaScript to C to Verilog, which is what I'm working on. I haven't done it yet.
And nothing works.
Yeah. But it is a subset of C. So there are compilers for Verilog, or you can write in Verilog itself, which is you're actually talking about wires. So you're saying the clock needs to come in here. You're saying the wire goes to there, and it's, yeah, electrically on the die. Not fun. So why isn't it everywhere? It's GPL firmware, like I said. It's community, not corporation. There's not a single, apart from one company where I bought this from, that actually does this. It's not used anywhere other than academia and research and general people. Feel free to interrupt me, by the way, because I'm going to go through these pretty quickly now, just because I want to get to what the hell the SDRs are and running Linux on this. So, again, confusion over that. It is a generic processor. It's a five-stage pipeline. I've got a nice systems book from school. Look at it. Look at that. It's very, very similar. It's fairly straightforward. It's just a stage pipeline.
In order execution?
Yes, in order execution, so it's kind of slow. Yeah, there's not much to that. That's another reason why it's not used everywhere. There is no ASIC available. They did a really good push. Open Cores is where this is from.
Chair.
No, it's, well, I'll just grab one. It'll be easier. Open Cores is the site where it's from. They're trying to get enough money to do a whole set of dies made, so you can go and purchase one that runs at a lot faster. Obviously, you don't need an FPGA, all that kind of stuff, but there's, again, not as much demand for it. So, open system on a chip. Mine is 22,000 gates, 32 megs of RAM, 1 meg of flash, because SDIO, 1000 Ethernet on it. USB host slave and USB power configuration, UARTs, FTDIs, and it does expansion as well. Whole little computer right here, 32 megs of RAM. Does its thing. It's got an SD slot on it. Haven't used it. Yeah. So, what is a RTL SDR? USB DVB ADC. Sort of like SNMP MIB OITs. Yeah. No, I'm just screwing with you guys. Acronyms reign king, I guess, in, you know, Linux and Unix and computers. By the way, SNMP MIB OIT is actually a thing, which sucks when you have to work with it. So they really are analog to digital converters. Like I said, they're meant for digital video broadcasts. So CBC, transmitting it digital, pick it up, play it on your computer. Costs about $20, both of those models. The black one that got passed around is the cheaper end. It came out first. It goes to about 900 megahertz. The white one goes to 1.7 gigahertz. That's the white one there. 14 megahertz is the low end. If you start getting lower than that, you can't separate anything else. The front end, how many people have done radio at all?
Sort of. Okay. The front end on this really sucks. So it really it can't pick up much, and when you can pick it up, there's so much noise right next to it, it doesn't matter because you can't differentiate it.
Is this able to pick up cell phone communication?
Yes.
Now I know why.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll get to that. For what it's worth, please, 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 for the love of God, use SSL on top of GSM for anybody that's doing it. Just to play around with it, I'll show you in a second with GNU Radio, but that particular model, the white one that passed around, $20, plug it into a Unix system, you can get GSM, then you can decode GSM, so you get the actual packets, and I didn't break it because it's illegal, but it's very easy to break GSM A5 encryption. At that point, you have whatever was being transmitted. Like, it's done. So use SSL over top of it. It's going over the airwaves, and your transport isn't secure anymore. Not that it ever was. These things have 1 megahertz bandwidth window, meaning that at a single point in time, you can listen to 1 megahertz of spectrum. Unix systems are really handy because you can plug in multiples of these. I've done up to 3 at one time with this laptop, and you just get a 3 megahertz window. You can all tune them differently, all that stuff. But the 1 megahertz, to give you some idea, the ISM band at 2.4 gigahertz is 100 megahertz, but each channel is, correct me, only about 500 kilohertz. No, that's the separation. It's 25 megahertz as the channel. So you need 25 of these to receive full single channel 802.11a. It's not really used for that, but GSM is great, any HF stuff's great, standard FM, obviously the DVB stuff that it's used for, what it's marketed as. It also does 1 million samples a second at the low end, anywhere from 1 million to 3.2 million samples a second. And it really does function as an ADC. It is literally, I think I have it down there, 8-bit resolution, yeah. It literally is analog to digital, that's all it does in this functionality. There are drivers out there for Linux that'll do the DVB for you, that'll decode it, all that stuff. But it really does function very much like an ADC. Yay! Okay, so any questions about this kind of stuff before I get into somewhat of a presentation? Like a somewhat of a demo.
So can you use it to get actual TV, digital TV?
Yes. These particular ones I bought, they don't do ATSC.
Which is most of North America, though.
Which is North America.
Yeah, they're great if you go to, like, Europe.
Or Asia.
They pick up everything.
Yeah. These ones I bought for $20 for this. You can pick up ones for about $40 that'll do ATSC. Here in North America.
That's the coding, or is that the bandwidth?
It's the encoding.
Okay.
Theoretically, you could do it in software. I haven't done it in software. I don't think it's really possible. Not easily. So yes, it is possible to do. I haven't picked anything up with these, obviously, because there's no transmitter running per particular codec. Yeah, any other questions?
Sorry if I missed it. Where'd you buy it?
eBay. $20 off eBay. There's also, let me find, there's also RTR, that one, right here. There's a few sites, I can send links to the mailing list if people are interested, but this one has, I know for a fact, has a list of where you can buy them, what ones are compatible by putting it into this mode of an ADC, because a lot of the ones you buy will not do this. This is a specific... For the technically inclined, this is an E4000 front end with an RTL 2883 chipset. So those are the ones, the supported ones. You can see them, right? They're all fairly straightforward. So
I'm a bit confused. What's the relationship between the DVB thingy and the FPGA thingy?
Nothing yet.
Okay.
I'll get to it.
Okay. Why is REC in your list of sites?
Why is what and what?
REC.
What are you talking about?
When you went to type it in, REC came up.
That?
Yeah.
Rat. I'm a ham.
You can say that again.
Not spam. I am a ham. Yes. Anyways, I'm a new ham in town, so I'll be using this stuff in packet radio and stuff too. But anyways, so let's get a small demo going with this. It's literally, I don't know how good the reception is going to be in here. It could be totally crap. It really could be. There's no real way to tell. I have some recordings. I should play those first, actually. Let's see if I can. Well, bring my terminal.
Can you use this backwards to broadcast?
No. This is only a receiver. This is not a transmitter. In Canada, you need to either have permission from Industry Canada and have it be regulated, as in your transmitter will not transmit more than X number of power out, or you need to be a ham, and then you're still restricted. Or you need to be in the unlicensed spectrum to broadcast, but even then you're supposed to have a license. But you can broadcast in the ISM bands, as in, you know, your wireless router is perfectly legal, obviously. So, yeah, this is purely a receiver. It's not a transmitter, because it really does do 14 megahertz up to 1.7 gigahertz. You start transmitting in the AM frequencies for the Richardson International Airport, they'll get pretty cranky. And you'll get arrested and go to jail.
Better find you first.
That's actually very, very quickly determined. A guy named Ed here in town, Ed Richardson, works for the city.
Is that that fun truck that has all the antennas stuck all over it?
No. But he with 200 milliseconds, he can triangulate where the hell you are. Period. End of story. Because he's got enough antennas. You transmit, it logs all of it on specific frequencies. It just does the power differential to triangulate.
What's the range?
City of Winnipeg. Wow. It's for specific frequencies, right? EMS. They want to know who's broadcasting in EMS bands. That's just standard. So,
keep mobile.
I'd say. So I'm going to force my sound up a little bit further than it probably should go.
Make sure you wipe this transmitter and tie it to your name.
For that,
proof of aliens.
Yeah, that buzzing was data in FM mode. Keep in mind, all kinds of stuff on the air. I'll show you that in a second. There's literally tons of stuff out there. That was some data. There's off of this thing, you can receive FM without an issue. That's Power 97 without an issue. Can you 162? That's 163.018, which is just above Weather Canada. And that's somebody who has license here in Winnipeg to have a specific amount of spectrum.
Where is the CB range in all this?
CB? I don't actually know. Anybody know where CB is?
30 megahertz.
30 megahertz?
Give or take.
And this was
it's just above the 10-meter band.
This thing will... Okay, yeah. This thing will go down to 14 megahertz. So it'll go to the 10-meter band. I was able to pick up beacons at the 8-meter band. That's it. So 8 meters, yeah.
So it could be a CB listening device.
Yeah, sure. If it's above 14 megahertz, you can pick it up.
I think the GMRS is that are up at 160.
Yep. Yeah, there's an unlicensed spectrum up there. A lot of them now will also be at 900 megahertz, which is another unlicensed spectrum band. Old cordless phones were straight FM in the 900 megahertz band.
Most of your handhelds are blocked out for that.
Yep. Yeah, but this thing will receive anything. Like I said, I didn't press the button because it's illegal, but I got to the point where GSM was sitting there. It's one step further to crack it. You can pick up cell, you can pick up anything you want on this.
Police scanner?
Yeah, well, it's not a police scanner, it's just a police scanner, but yeah, you can listen on the police actually, I believe, use cell now. They use licensed and they use encryption now. Ambulance does not here in town. Okay. You can listen in on the ambulance. You can listen in on the airport.
Police use BlackBerry's because of the encryption.
Yeah. Obviously, any kind of aircraft stuff has to be international and in plain text because people, you know, in the sky, oh my God, I need to land. How do you talk to somebody if you don't have their encryption codes? You have it in plain text.
In English.
In English, yes. NATO and English. That is the standard.
Except coming into Mirabelle.
Really? Okay. Sure.
Hey, it's their province.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's some of the stuff. Let's see what else is here. There's 140.28. That's different data. I picked this stuff up today or yesterday, kind of thing. Different kinds of data. Pagers are also, MTS operates two different pager frequencies here in town.
Satellite?
It can pick up satellite, and it can pick up satellite frequency, I should say. Satellites are fairly weak signals, meaning that you would need a directional Yagi to pick them up.
Or a dish.
Just
go right off your dish.
You need a decent antenna, is my point.
Somebody who's blacking out background.
Yes. And, yeah, it this thing picks up the 2 meter band on ham fine. That's 144 to 148. Picks it up perfectly fine, crystal clear. But
the guy did a talk on the satellite, and he says you've got to, because of the Doppler effect, you've got a pre-planet with about five different frequencies to pick it up coming in and then going away because there's such a shift because of its speed.
Yeah, no, there's some really interesting stuff. Speaking of that, Unix actually has that. Like, there is a GNU radio something. I can't remember what. It showed you the azimuth and where they are geographically and all that stuff. And you could even attach your controllers to your boom, so you could move your antennas around.
G-predict.
Yeah. That's what it was. Right. So yeah, this will work with that. It's just that you really do. The antenna on this thing, and the front end is crap. So it's $20. Like, don't try to do crazy stuff with it like I am. It doesn't work. I attached it to my dad's 40-foot HF rig. That's how I got down. I was able to get beacons at the 8-meter band, or the 6-meter band, rather, or 6 or 8, out in Austin. That's it. You try and go any lower than that, it just won't work. I think that's about it I had for this. It's just that. I think it went through long, right? Yeah. All right, so I'm just going to... So I installed the DVB drivers for Linux, and every time I plug the device in now, I need to remove the modules, because otherwise you can't put it into this EDC mode. So that's what I just did. So I'll run this just to show you guys really quickly. Oh, it's on my other screen. Go that way. Eh. There. Oh. Some.
Interesting back, though.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to switch my display over so you guys can see this. Video. Yeah. That's what I get for using this bloody interface.
Apply.
Oh, no, don't do that. Oh, cool. So this is a really... Oh, God. Ooh, horrible kind of stuff, but... Let's see if I can pick up 97, because it's a fairly strong signal here. 97.5 megahertz. It's wideband FM. Keep in mind, you can do all kinds of decoding with this. All kinds. It's all done in software. I don't think I'm going to get much. Not in here, anyways. Yeah, nothing. This place is pretty horrible for reception. Really horrible. I mean, people lose cell service in here, for God's sake.
Thank you. Actually, last month, I suddenly noticed that I have perfect reception here.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because my cell is at like one bar or two bars.
I have an MTS phone. I've had the same phone for a year, and I've been looking, I was like, oh, I can't get anything. And then last month, it's like, I just started using it. It's like, hey, wait a minute. I'm not supposed to be getting reception here.
Yeah.
All right. So that's why something changed. Yeah. I don't know what changed, but yeah. The reception in here is great. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, this was supposed to somewhat work, but take my word for it, this really was. I hit the recording button right there, and recorded those samples. Like, it really is just straight ADC. If you're in the right node, it'll demodulate it just fine.
CBC might get through. I
know that, right? 68, no, because this thing doesn't go down to AM stations.
No, but CBC or FM.
What is that? It's
like 98 or something.
What was
98.3.
Oh, really?
Okay. This, by the way, cheap devices, they overheat. They're a pain in the ass. They're $20, so take it with a grain of salt. They start to mess up, and when I say mess up, I mean fail randomly and start giving you garbage without any notification, which is never good. So that's
89.3? 98.3.
Actually, there's 89.3, too. CBC1 or CBC2.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, there's nothing. It's not getting through.
Well, how sensitive is that? How many decimal places can you go on the frequency select? Like, is it sensitive to that, or are you pretty well limited to the first decimal?
Well, let me put it to you this way. The front end on this sucks, so it'll receive everything, and you're drilling down in software.
Okay.
You can't limit your front end.
Yeah.
Would meaning, higher or lower frequencies in that range be easier to pick up in here?
Probably higher, but no guarantees. Yeah, that's not making getting through. That's Weather Canada. Well, let's see if this works. 890. By the way, for those who don't know, 890 is GSM, 900, and that's not getting through.
What about wireless? 2.4?
It won't go that high. It'll go to 1.7. Yeah, 890. You usually see... You can see some things getting through here. These are really strong cell signals, usually. But 890 is the base of GSM. So when you connect to Rogers, it looks for something at 890, just off that with your carrier. And then your upstream and downstream are at frequencies up from that at about 920-something. So you can see some things getting through, but not much. This is actually like, whoa, usually. It's just
what would they call a waterfall display?
Yeah, it's a waterfall display. Time goes up, and frequency is that way, and you got strength that way. Yeah.
Try 101.5.
Yeah, this thing isn't picking up anything. Yeah. Keep in mind that any radio you have here will probably get that just fine. It has to do with the front end on this being very, very crappy.
My CBC at 89.3 is coming to clear as a bell.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It really... Anyways, so that's the SDR stuff. Give you some idea. You can do all kinds of shit with it.
Is that what an SDR desktop is?
Well, yeah, I'll show you the actual SDR side. A new radio is your best friend with this stuff. That's... what is this? This is my POGSAC testing. So basically, this is where that interface came from. Not quite this, but you define all these blocks, including your inputs or outputs, what you want to do with the data, how you want to manipulate it, all your inputs to your variables, waterfall displays, everything in this. It's all open source. And then you hit run. And, of course, I messed with it just before the presentation, so give me half a second, I'll change this. Give me some idea how easy it is. Literally, enable, disable, disable, run. Ta-da! And this didn't actually work, because I was trying to listen in on what I thought was POGSAC, which is pager stuff. I was trying to listen in on it on this frequency, which is what I recorded earlier, the 162.867. There's something there, but obviously we can't receive it and that kind of stuff. So the FPGA stuff, I'll get to that since it's at 9:05, and please ask me questions later on if you care. But this thing...
All the SDR stuff I've seen is there was one or two for Linux, but the majority of it was for Windows, and I was looking for OS X. There's some hacks, but I don't know how good they are, and I'm not sure what I'm looking for. So,
yeah.
If you had a desktop that was there, then one that was nice to look at to see what it should look like.
Yeah, well, GNU Radio, you can make it do whatever you want. It really is the tool that you use to create your own GUI to do whatever. And keep in mind, it can take analog, and it can actually do really cool stuff with USRPs, where you actually do receive and transmit. Those are about $800. They actually have an FPGA in them, by the way, but besides the point.
So if I had any despair, I know who to go to it.
Yeah. So I just plugged it in. This thing is powered off of USB. Yay. Literally plugged it in. You can see it there. It's the FTDI chipset. Quad USB UART. This is what the RTL device shows up as, a DVD-T.
It's got Bluetooth on it.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing with this. I can grab. I grabbed my my wireless keyboard. Logitech keyboards, 27 megahertz ISM band. So if you feel like decoding them, you can. Yeah.
Make a way to hack into a university email.
Yes, because that's the way you hack into a university email.
That would be wrong.
Yeah. Come on.
That GNU Radio hasn't been worked on in a while.
Yeah, it's been worked on for a long time. GNUradio.org. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's got distribution here, 2011-1208, or 2011-1208.
Yeah, this could just be an old page.
Yeah.
Everything in there is old.
Also, keep in mind, I could be running an earlier version than that. It's all about the modules put into it. So I'm just going to open up. So one thing to note, if you're ever going to look at this stuff, OpenRISC, the board, Open System on Chip, there's a site right off where I bought it that links to ISO download. It's a VM image. Actually, no, it's a VMDK image, actually. But I'm just going to start up. Well, I have to do it in root to get access to the USB device. I want to pass it through.
In recent Pi news, OpenRISC has been ported for the Pi now. So that's one of the options.
Hey. Yes, that'd be kind of cool. Wait a second, OpenRISC was ported to the Pi? Pi runs ARM.
Yeah. That's what I heard.
No, OpenRISC is an architecture. Just like ARM is an architecture. You
maybe
that is possible, but ugly as sin. Yeah. So this is loading up. It really does make life simple. And if you're looking at this, within 5 minutes of looking at this, I had Linux running on this. So if you're going to spend $200 on this, it's well worth it. And you will run Linux in 5 minutes, I guarantee you. It's step by step, why you're doing things, how you're doing it. I didn't change any of this stuff. This is literally what it comes with right away. Like, double click on running software on your FPGA. Oh, look, programming it. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff here. So exactly how to do it, all that kind of stuff. So all I'm going to do is show you Linux running on it. Because I actually had this thing running a custom instruction on it. Because it's written in Verilog, you can go in and modify the Verilog source. Then you can write a small little snippet of C code that messes around with your registers on your CPU to put it into that mode. And you can, the point of all this coming together with the DVB SDR, why I was talking about it at all, is because you can do that. And that whole demodulation of FM, you can do on this. You can inline it into your instruction. So instead of having, say, I don't even know how many instructions a normal demod would take, but you're talking about every register, every bit of data being pushed around the CPU while you do ands, while you do multiplies, multiple times, at least. You're talking probably around 50 instruction cycles. Give or take, to do that. With this, you can do it in one cycle and just pipeline it all in, because you're creating your own instruction. So you can say, I want to take this byte of data, and I want to do this to it. And you can have a list of five things, and it'll just do that. Then it'll pipe it into that, do that, pipe it into that, do that. And at the end of it, you'll have it. So that's what these are used for, really. And I had that working, and I RM'd the wrong directory, so I'm sorry. But I was lazy. So really simply, I'm just going to run this. So for the really diehards in here, you can run... where am I? I'm in the wrong area. Connect to that, blah, blah, blah. Programming to run Linux. Nope. PG dev board. So what you do is... Yeah, get out of there. So you go into tool. So what it's doing now is it's literally going in and programming the FPGA with JTAG. That being said, it's already set up for this, so it's going to come back and say, oh, look, it already did. Scan device output match expected values. It's already set up that way, so it's not going to bother to rewrite the chip. Then copy. Paste. Fail. Yay for, you know, horrible, horrible fail in front of people.
No.
Yeah.
Did you grab the device?
I swear this worked as of like an hour ago. Well, 2 hours ago now.
Of course. As soon as you start to show it to somebody, it fails.
Yes, exactly. So, error. Damn it. Damn, damn, damn. But, so we'll just skip that and see if this works. I don't think it will at all. But the point is, we'll just walk through it then. Set it up. You open a console to it, which is, they use PicoCom. Any standard serial interface will do. Yay! It was already set up that way. Okay. And then you, in this version, you open up you open up GDB. It's a customized GDB build, but it's GDB. Can it connect to... That will fail, because I don't have that open already. Yeah, that's the thing that can work. That needs to open up. It doesn't like it. Maybe because I started it afterwards, it didn't catch it or something.
That was new at one.
There we go. Maybe. No.
Maybe, see, it learns it knew you wanted it to do bad things.
Yeah. Well, I'm not actually doing anything bad with it. I've been very good. Very good, I say.
But it does make the decryption.
It's just for demonstration purposes only.
Yeah. No. So basically, you connect it, you use GDB. You literally say, load that file. It loads it onto the into the memory of the device. You load it. It goes and does its thing. SPR NPC. I don't know what that stands for. I'm assuming it's software program register and something program counter. I know it's program counter. You basically set the program counter to where the first instruction is. You hit C, and it runs it. And I'm going to try one last time to see what may have changed. But it really is, it does run Linux and it's done. That's all you need to do to run Linux on this thing. It's surprisingly fast. When it works, of course, it doesn't pick it up now for some reason. Stupid thing. Ah, well, utter fail for presentation. utter fail.
Not utter.
Pretty close to utter.
Some of it was fun.
Yeah. So if people are interested, this thing, you can actually, it has GPIO pins on the back. Do you like soldering that? Really? $200? Soldered? Gone? I'm not doing it. But you can. You can do some really cool stuff with it. Yeah.
So, question.
Okay.
That was pretty fast. So, the Mantis string, you load it to the FPGA, the OpenRISC framework, so that it can run the RISC instruction set, and then you just attempted, and failed, but that's okay, to run a Linux image that was compiled for that RISC instruction set?
Yes.
So you've configured that FPGA to run this instruction step by hooking together all those little gates in there
yes.
to act like that kind of processor
yes.
and support the USB port, the various ports.
All the stuff that's on it.
So that it would act like that kind of a system.
Yes.
You could have loaded whatever you wanted in that FPGA to make it act like anything else that you had enough cells to do.
That's exactly the point, yeah.
That's true, too.
Because me.
Now we understand.
The only thing I know about FPGAs is that they used to be used as a prototyping before committing to ASIC.
Yes, they still are.
You would prototype your design, you'd set up your pipelines, all your gates and all that stuff, because you can redo these things on the fly without committing to silicon.
Yes.
Once you had it all debugged and you ran it through all your regression tests, blah, 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 made sure you had backwards compatibility for the old instruction set, then you went to the guys and say, burn me some silicon, because they don't want to do it twice.
Yeah.
Because building the first one's a bitch.
Yeah. Right?
So
such language.
You used FPGAs to prototyping phase. However, nowadays, they've come into the range of the common man as a tool to use to do all sorts of neat things, and you can reuse them to do other neat things as you wish. As opposed to building all those gates on a breadboard and doing all that crap and having to do all that soldering work later. They're really cool.
Yeah, so they really are used
for... That's a rigid radio, right?
Is there an image? How many times you can reprogram it?
Yeah.
Before it's given the appearance?
Yes, there is. FPGAs do have a shelf life over how many times you can write them. This one is, I think, at about 60,000. It's cheap. It's about 60,000.
Like SSDs.
Yeah.
The more you spend, the longer it lasts.
Well, keep in mind, if we go back to that image that I grabbed off Wikipedia, it is a lookup table. You're programming a lookup table, and you're programming those particular bits, saying, when you hit this, go here. So you can only write that so many times. It will wear out. You can get from Xilinx, I don't know how to pronounce it. This is an Altera one, by the way. There's two main FPGA providers, Altera and Xilinx. Don't know if I pronounced the last one right. You can get one for about $1,000, PCI Express, 320 gates. The cool thing about it is, while your chip is running, you can reprogram it. Now, why would you want to do that? Because you could have a core, like OpenRISC, in one section of the die. You can then, while that thing is running, mess around with the other parts of it. So as long as you segregate what you really care about off, you can actually start to do some really cool stuff like dynamically putting GNU radio modules into the actual instruction on the chip. And that's what I was trying to do, and I had set up, and then it failed. And it uses a standardized bus. OpenRISC has, along with it, a wishbone architecture. It's a 8-bit bus. No, 32-bit. Sorry, 32-bit bus. And it basically, you connect it to whatever else you want. It's input-output to whatever module. You can do whatever you want with. So there's all kinds of stuff on there that'll do it. You know what? Try this one last time.
Can you wipe it and reprogram it?
Yes, I can do that. But. Oh, yeah, sure, I can. Sure, you're doing that.
The same thing over and over again. Now you limit on how many times you can do it.
Yeah. Well, not likely, not yet, anyways. So, like I said, it comes with all the source. It comes with the source for the OpenRISC architecture, the OpenRISC implementation, which is the OR1200. It comes with Linux kernel that you can build against straight away, which I did. It comes with all kinds of stuff on it. See, it comes with SIM, so you can literally do this in GTK Wave or whatever you want if you want to do some really hardcore debugging. It's there. But since I can't seem to get this working right away, I think that this is probably going to be the end of it. Yeah. Let me try this.
You have the same curse as Mike.
Yeah. Exactly. Good.
It'll work the second way, I'll leave.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like, oh, look, now it works. Like, death.
Computers, little kids, and animals like making liars of us all.
Nope, it's not gonna work.
Words.
Okay, well, I don't want to keep you guys. This is, you can look through my bash history. This is what I did. I literally went, oh, look at that. Program it, run that, and then we're into the stuff that I did now in this session. But, yeah, no, it really did run. I swear, it ran Linux without too much work. And I honestly don't know what has changed.
We zapped it.
Yeah, I doubt it. I doubt it, because otherwise it wouldn't JTAG it. Like, it wouldn't actually format the chip properly. So.
It's the IBM building.
Yeah. But, yeah, any questions? Because there's all kinds of stuff that I flew through really quickly, and the point was to interconnect the two. So.
Okay, this kind of relates to when you were demonstrating the SDR. Have you tried accessing it through mPlayer or VLC, because apparently they've got software built in which may substitute for the front end?
Yes. I mentioned that I had the DVB software on this. I can show you that briefly, but at the end of the day, it won't work here because these are the different models. They don't have the right decoding on them. But yes, you can get open source software for them. You can get plugins for them with anything major. Both KDE and GNOME have built, like, standardized with their environment players that will run. Also, VLC is like this de facto, just go to this device and listen on this channel. And
exactly.
It'll do it. Has anybody done that with this? Have you?
Don't have the device yet.
Yeah. Like I said, $20. Cheap-ass device. By the way, I had another one of these. It stopped working. They're $20. Your mileage may vary. They don't do very good.
Are there any ones that are, like, $40 that are better, or...?
This is yes and no.
Easy cap, I think, is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, this doesn't have the easy cap chipset on it. These are... But, yeah, there are other ones out there you can get, but... If you're starting to get serious into this, you should pick up a USRP, and they're $800. But for receiving only, there's not much, because these are meant for broadcast. These are meant for utterly huge, strong signals coming in, so the front end on them sucks. Yeah. Any other questions?
Can you, help matters by using specifically tuned antennas to get more rejection outside of what you're trying to work with?
Theoretically, yes, but in actuality, no, because your front end will still, any little bit of noise outside of that narrow frequency that you're listening for will still get picked up by this front end, because you can't tune the front end to only listen here. You can't just do band filters in software, because it's you're doing it after the preamp. It's already amplifying all of this noise that comes in through the device.
But if you're running shielded antenna, right, your antenna is going to reject a lot of the noise frequencies you don't care about.
Yes, if you can manage to tune your antenna so that it only picks up those, theoretically it'll work better. But really, if you're bothering to do that, use a better ADC. Like, use something that's meant to do this. But these are kind of cool for playing around, listening to people's radios, listening to aircraft. There's a really cool thing. I'm going to see if I can bring it up. This will scare a lot of people. How many people saw this stuff? This Spench.net? Nobody? It's a guy in Australia. He's been doing this for a while. But what he did with this dongle, actually, one that's very using the same chipset, is he went to the top of a hill in Sydney International Airport, and keep in mind, planes all have transponders, which is base station sends out a frequency over here. It actually picks it up, sends it back saying, I'm here, here's my tail number, here's my lat, long, altitude, position, all that stuff. It's how, you know, people actually, air traffic controllers know what's going on. This guy managed, there's all kinds of stuff. No. That's completely illegal.
Oh, I would have been.
It was horribly illegal. Like, throw you in jail for 20 years. But, keep in mind, if you're close enough to the airport, you can listen in on the signal that's coming back. So what this guy did, and you can do it, I can probably do it, but I've got a really bad internet connection here, is these are planes. And he actually did a real-time thing where those are the flight paths, those are the planes, real-time, in Sydney. So, I mean, you can imagine why this is kind of, you know, good and bad at the same time.
He didn't get into trouble for that?
No, there's nothing illegal about it. He's pulling down airwaves, and he's not decoding anything. He's not decrypting. In Canada, you can get GSM just fine. You may not decrypt A5 encryption unless you can guarantee that it's your own stuff that you're decrypting. Otherwise, you have broken the radio regulations, and you're subject to 5 years in prison and $20,000 fine, maximum.
Or both.
Or both, yes. Or both. So, don't do it. I didn't do it. But, yeah. So you can do some cool stuff. You can, people have been reading pagers. I know Les.net here in town set up a paging system. I was able to read that with this. Pretty much anything in RF you can pick up.
So you could use a pager like a tracking device? Mm-hmm.
No, because how are you going to get direction off of it? Multiples of these,
sure.
Yeah, and pagers don't actually transmit, they receive. They're a dumb device, they just receive. There's no guarantee that it actually got there.
Okay.
So, but you can read people's...
cell phones. That's GSM.
That's GSM.
So potentially you could read text pages.
What do you mean?
Well, pagers text.
Yes, no, pager text. I've read pagers. I've read text off pagers. It's, yeah, readily available over the airwaves for free. And it's zero liability legally.
So don't send the root password.
No. And don't do it over GSM either, unless you're using SSL.
Or a BlackBerry.
Yes, because I can't, yeah.
Well, yeah. And I just go to RIM and say, I want the password.
Yeah. Like I said, wireless keyboards, all that stuff. If you have a good, big enough dish or really good antenna, these things will work fine. They won't do HF. They won't go down past the 8-meter, 6-meter band, give or take. They just won't do it. They start to, if you ever pick up one of these and you start to see random data, it's because this thing messed up. This cheaper one overheats. You let it sit and you run it at full tilt for 20 minutes, the thing will burn your hand. It stops working, it burns your hand. So they're not meant to be great stuff, but they are kind of cool.
Can you turn the sample rate down and run cooler?
These things, if you go lower than on this particular model, 800,000 samples a second, it ceases to function. The chipset isn't designed for it.
But does it run cooler at lower sample rate?
I didn't notice anything measurable, but keep in mind the difference was between 1 and 800, mm-hmm. like 1 megahertz and 800. So, these things are designed to run and watch TV for hours on end, so it could have been the fact that I was tuning it to a frequency that I wasn't supposed to. I mean, it is an IC chipset, so I could be actually pushing the actual silicon to where it will cause problems. Yeah.
There was someone who had a transverter hooked up to it that bumped it up 60 mega or 60 hertz.
Really?
Yeah. So it would take everything, you know, the HF band bumps it up 60, and it was all readable.
Not 60 hertz, 60 kilohertz.
Something like that,
multiplier.
Yeah. It would have to be, because this thing, actually 60 megahertz about, because...
Yeah, 60 megahertz.
That would be cool. I've looked into doing that, but I haven't bothered to do it yet. With that, you'd be able to pick up anything around the world, literally. There are higher-end ones of these listed that will pick up to ISM band, 2.4 gigahertz. That would give you... Keep in mind that that means for $1,000, give or take, you could monitor everybody's phone calls, period, for standard GSM. Kind of scary, and I guarantee you people have done it already, because there's no law against it, and there's no way to get caught if you're only doing passive attacks. So, yeah, that's me. Unfortunately, this thing failed, and I wasn't able to connect the two for you, but the idea was show the load on the CPU when you're doing the GNU radio stuff, like on my laptop. It's spiking the load, because it's actually doing real-time, all that data coming in, doing the demodulation in software. If you put that into hardware, into actual metal, effectively.
Can you freeze your laptop up to decode the GSM?
Yeah. And more to the point, it can be done with very low power devices. So, yay. Any questions? So I'm done, really. And we're actually done on time. It's 9:33.
Woohoo!
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more mug meeting summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.